From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
I just had a friend whose brother lost an entire hand in an attack by a pit bull. And I understand that all dogs of any breed can be aggressive or turn aggressive or just snap one time when you don't expect it. But it seems to me that pit bulls just are so powerful.
Lady, I'm curious. It feels like there's a lot of people who have the sense that pit bulls are dangerous. And then you talk to people on your side of things, and they're saying the data isn't actually there. What do the studies tell us about this?
The studies show that all dogs are individuals. We've had, you know, really horrible maulings by golden retrievers, you know, that it killed a woman in Illinois. We've had, you know, dachshunds that took a woman down, a pack of dachshunds, you know. I mean, so again, any dog can bite.
I'm Sarah Fenske. On yesterday's show, we talked with Hannah Meisel. She's the Illinois governor and politics editor for NPR Illinois. And she explained that with longtime House Speaker Mike Madigan gone, the legislature feels much different this year. Madigan was a gatekeeper.
His nickname that he earned over the years was the Velvet Hammer, meaning, you know, he didn't make a fuss necessarily, but he made deals behind the scenes. And he, you know, if he didn't want something done, it wouldn't happen. And if he did, it would.
Now, Madigan's successor, that's Emmanuel Chris Welch, let members have more control, for better or worse, as Hannah explained yesterday.
He didn't necessarily want to say no to any of his members, unlike Speaker Madigan before him. And that meant a lot of legislation was passing out of the, you know, out of House committees, and there was just a lot going on, and it was kind of, at times unmanageable.
And that is Hannah Meisel of NPR Illinois. Now, that new paradigm has been hard for political reporters like Hannah, and it's been hard in some ways for Governor J.B. Pritzker. He's threatened to veto some of the flood of legislation reaching his desk. But for people advocating for causes they believe in, this new Illinois legislature has been far from untenable. And that includes some animal welfare advocates. For them, it's been a very good year, with some passage of some bills they've worked hard on. And joining me today to talk about that is Leedy Van Cavage. She's the senior legislative attorney with Best Friends Animal Society. Leedy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And it was a banner year. It was so exciting.
So do you think that is in part because Mike Madigan no longer had the legislature in such a tight grip?
I think that, and I think COVID, not really no animal bills passing last year. That was, you know, the first year in a long time that we didn't have any good legislation passing. So I think it was all kind of like stored up and the dam broke and the animals got their day. So, you know, hopefully the governor will sign the bills.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big question. But we want to talk about some of these pieces of legislation that you've got through this banner year. What is included in that? Let's start with House Bill 1711. My reading of this basically stops pet stores from selling cats and dogs.
Yes, yes. They, you know, people can still go to breeders to buy a cat or a dog if they choose, or they can go to their shelter, which we hope they will do. So again, and it allows the rescues, the pet stores, if they want to partner with a rescue or an animal control facility, to bring in animals from the rescues, the humane societies, like PetSmart does, like Petco does. So again, these are models that work, but this will stop the puppy mill industry from importing dogs and cats into Illinois. So we are excited that it will occur.
So a lot of Illinois municipalities and some other jurisdictions had already banned sales from commercial breeding operations.
Right.
Do you think this will be a big change? Are a lot of stores affected by this?
I think a lot of stores will be affected by it, and more states are adopting this. Like, Illinois will become the fifth state to do this. So again, you know, we prefer humane models of pet stores. They want to go to, you know, they can help shelters adopt out animals, or they can, you know, basically refer people to individual breeders where people will be able to see the dogs and the cats.
Was there much pushback from, I don't know, is there a pet store industry?
Oh, yeah. And again, HSUS really did the yeoman's work on this bill. They were wonderful. And
that's the Humane Society.
The Humane Society in the United States, yes. And they, you know, and we partnered with them on this. But again, there was a lot of pushback from the pet store industry. And there still is, you know. So again, the interesting thing is that basically kennel clubs do not allow their members to sell to pet stores. So reputable breeders don't sell to pet stores. Mm-hmm. So again, this just impacts puppy mills.
Okay. So that is House Bill 1711. It's now waiting for the governor's signature?
It hasn't been sent over to him yet. Once it gets sent over, he has basically 60 days to sign.
Okay. So something else you got through that you're really excited about, this is Senate Bill 154. This one is a little bit complicated. Walk us through what this would do.
So the problem is we all think pets are members of the family. You know, we think that, and that is not the problem, that we want to keep pets with their families. And basically, housing is the number two reason why dogs and cats are relinquished in the United States. Number one reason for dogs. So again, we want to make sure that people who are having to move into affordable housing, probably because of the COVID crisis, mm-hmm. or, you know, the economy, basically can keep their pets. So we'll allow any person who moves into affordable housing that gets money from the Illinois Affordable Housing Trust Fund to have two cats or one dog under 50 pounds. So again, because some of these housing units, they have restrictions on cats that weigh more than 15 pounds. I mean, it's crazy.
They restrict the cat weight?
Yes, yes. And I said, you know, I asked them, I said, what, do you have a scale in the lobby, you know, when people like walk their dog or their cat? You know, it's just crazy. So again, we want people to focus on the behavior of the dogs and the cats, you know, not their weight or their height or their breed, because that's just silly.
And yet here you're saying these are only dogs that weigh less than 50 pounds.
Right.
I imagine there's probably a lot of lovely bigger dogs that are excluded. Did you have to make that compromise?
Oh, we did. We made so many compromises on this bill. I think there were six amendments, and this was the hardest bill to get passed because a lot of the landlords, housing providers, basically said we want to be able to totally limit pets. And the pets are already in these units. Service animals, they have to make allowances for. Under the Fair Housing Act, they have to make allowances for emotional support animals. So the animals are already there. And again, they help, you know, with physical and mental benefits to people. You know, pets are, you know, are great support. So we're extremely happy that this was able to get through. And hopefully maybe next year we can get rid of the weight limits.
There you go. You're not going to give up.
No.
So you have another Senate bill. This is Senate Bill 1672. This one also deals with some dog breeds and mixes. What is going on with this?
So basically, insurance companies discriminate, well, many of them do, discriminate against breeds of dogs or mixes thereof. So your homeowner's insurance policy can be canceled, denied. They can fail to renew it simply because of the breed of the dog. So that's how the bill started out. The insurance companies all pushed back big time. So this is just a data call bill that we are requiring all insurance companies to report dog-related incidents to the Department of Insurance for 2 years. And so we can see really what is happening. Because, you know, we believe they're relying on dirty data or fatally flawed data. And we think the focus should be on the behavior of the animal, not the breed of the dog.
So let's talk about some specifics here.
Yes.
What are insurance companies doing that bothers you here? Is this related to pit bulls?
It's related to numerous breeds, Australian Shepherds, German Shepherds, mixes thereof, Rottweilers. The list of breeds goes on and on. And it's crazy. I mean, it really is, you know, and the fact that they will discriminate against mixes too, people might not even know the mix of their dog. Because of DNA testing, we find that animal shelters are right in guessing the breed of a dog in only only 25% of the cases.
Wow.
So you might not know that your dog's 13% pit bull, you know, and yet, you know, because of that, your homeowner's insurance could be denied. So if you focus on the behavior, that makes sense. And the most exciting news is Nevada passed a bill that was signed into law preventing this. So Nevada is the first state that basically has the most expansive law that prohibits insurance companies from discriminating against breeds of dogs.
And so your hope here is that with a couple years of reporting, you can show to these insurance companies, or that you can show to Illinois lawmakers?
That we can show to lawmakers and insurance companies that this is silly. And State Farm doesn't discriminate against breeds of dogs. In Illinois and Missouri, Farmers Insurance does not. USAA does not. So there's so many companies that don't, that we believe that this is an outdated model that the other insurance companies are using. And pets are members of the family. They're missing a great marketing opportunity by discriminating against breeds of dogs and their owners.
So if there are some companies that don't do this kind of discrimination, shouldn't that just give them an edge in the marketplace?
Well, I think it does. But by the same token, we have people that, you know, don't know what to do when their insurance is canceled. And so, you know, they take the dog to the shelter, you know. And so the insurance issue is all wrapped up with the housing issue, actually.
So you had mentioned State Farm, that they are somebody that does not discriminate on the basis of breed. They lobbied against this bill. Is that
well,
right?
Well, they did, because they said they don't want any regulations.
They don't
telling
want their
them
hands
what
tied.
To do. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But again, you know, they're great. They, on their website, they say they don't discriminate against breeds of dogs. And I think, you know, if, you know, for pet owners, I would assume that they need to, like, check if their insurance company does discriminate. And if they do, switch companies.
So this is actually a good time that I want to invite our listeners in to join this conversation. Maybe you're somebody who has one of these breeds that has been discriminated against. Maybe you're a landlord and you feel like you have good reason for discriminating. Maybe you're a pet store owner. No matter what your circumstances, we're interested in hearing from you. I'm going to open up our phone lines. You can call us at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at STL on air, or you can email us at talk@stlpr.org. We're curious to hear about your experience. We also want to hear your opinion on some of these many bills that Leedy has been working on. And Leedy, that is not the last bill you got through. This really was a banner.
It was a banner
session
year
for you guys. You also had Senate Bill 1673. This would allow shelter veterinarians to use non-surgical sterilization on shelter dogs and cats.
Yes, it's being developed right now. And we're seeing a lot of movement on this. So again, we're hoping that it would be a one-time shot, you know, that basically would be able to be used in animals, you know, throughout Illinois. So we're excited about it. But the interesting thing is the bill started out to make sure that the Department of Natural Resources does not lobby against trap, neuter, and return ordinances in Illinois, because they had a policy that allowed them to do that. And because of this bill, we were able to negotiate with them, and they removed their policy. So while they will still prohibit feral cat colonies on their lands that are managed by the Department of Natural Resources, they will leave the rest of the state alone, which they should.
Why are they in favor of feral cats? It's hard for me to understand.
Well, no, they're against feral cats on basically because they believe that they kill, you know, wildlife. And while they can be bad on wildlife, I mean, basically trap, neuter, and return is the only thing that's been done to control the population that we found that's effective. Because, you know, we've been trapping and, you know, catching cats and killing them for years, and we're still doing it. But with TNR, the colonies go down by attrition. And most people, you know, are willing to help, you know, trap the community cat, get them sterilized, put them back out in their neighborhood. But if they know it's going to be caught and killed, they don't want to help. And I don't blame them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 So, again, this makes sense.
But so the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, they have been against
they
this
have been
sort of
trap, neuter, and return. Yes. They would prefer them to be killed.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where the rub comes in, that we think that, you know, the trapping and killing is a failed model and it's inhumane. And we think trap, neuter, return works.
And so this bill, by allowing a new option for shelter veterinarians, you're actually able to get this other thing on the table here.
Exactly, exactly. And once the shots are available, we'll be able to do many cats very quickly. So that should make the Department of Natural Resources happy.
We're talking today to Leedy Van Cavage. She's a senior legislative attorney with Best Friends Animal Society. She's giving us all the good news for her organization that is coming out of Illinois. They had quite a good year there. And we also want to invite you to join us. We're going to get to the phone lines in just a moment after our break. You can call us at 314-382-8255. Again, that's 382-TALK if you want to join this conversation. We do need to take a quick break, though, but we will be back shortly to continue talking with Leedy. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. We're talking about some of the bills coming out of the Illinois legislature with Leedy Van Cavage. She's the senior legislative attorney with Best Friends Animal Society. Had a great year in Illinois. We're going to talk about Missouri in a moment, but first I do want to go to the phone lines. I'm curious to hear how people in the metro area feel about some of these changes, again, if signed. Let's go. John is calling from Ferguson. Hi, John. You're on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Ferguson, we've talked before.
Yes, thank you for coming back. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, most people who are owners are very good about making sure their animals are kept under control. But being a mailman, there's sometimes we have people who are renters that don't.
You feel like there's a difference, a substantive difference between people who own homes versus people who rent in terms of their animal care?
Yes.
Interesting. So how has that manifested for you? Are dogs a big problem?
Generally, when it's a renter, they don't keep control of their dogs. We've had a couple letter carriers who've been seriously mauled.
Hmm. Is that something where the letter carriers then, they're going to go to the insurance companies and try to get recompense?
Well, from what I understand, because the renters don't own the property, there's a level of...
They don't worry about this.
They don't worry about this. So the carriers end up, we've got two people who are out on long-term disability because they're scared.
Well, John, I appreciate hearing that perspective. We certainly want our mail carriers to feel like they're safe out there. Leedy, I'd love your thoughts on this.
Yeah, and again, dogs should be kept under control. And these bills basically allow the housing providers to make sure the dogs are under control, or else they can have the renters get rid of the dogs. So again, we think leash laws are extremely important. Fencing is always good, but if you're a renter, obviously you can't put up a fence. So we want people to be responsible. And what we find in a lot of these cases is they involve reckless owners. So there are, Illinois has a reckless owner law that prevents certain owners from owning dogs if they, you know, have, if their dogs have demonstrated bad behavior on numerous occasions. So we think that like cities and states should enact something like that.
And so if I'm a landlord and I have a tenant and this dog doesn't seem to be fully under control, let's say my postman is complaining about this, under this law, do I still have some options here?
Oh, yeah. You can basically make sure if the dog is a nuisance, you can make the tenant get rid of the dog. But basically, you just can't make them not have a dog that weighs under 50 pounds because you don't like dogs.
Okay. Well, that was some valuable perspective there from John. We want to thank him for sharing his thoughts here. And if you have thoughts on some of these breed-specific laws or some of the perception out there about your dog, we'd love to hear from you. Phone lines are open at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Leedy, I'm curious. It feels like there's a lot of people who have the sense that pit bulls are dangerous. And then you talk to people on your side of things, and they're saying the data isn't actually there. What do the studies tell us about this?
The studies show that all dogs are individuals, you know, and basically most of the factors that are involved in bites are in control of the owner, you know, basically. You know, how do they train the dog? Do they, you know, how do they treat the dog? Is it a family member? Is it tied in the backyard? So again, you know, is the dog socialized? You know, is there a medical issue involving the dog? So a lot depends most of the situation involves the owner. And the nice thing is that dog bites from 2019 to 2020 decreased by 4.6% despite more people having dogs. So you know, actually, you know, our human and dog relationship is one that works very, very well.
It's interesting. I mean, that seems like a marked decrease. Do you have any idea what might be leading to that?
No, I really don't. But I do think people treating dogs as family members, and because dogs have evolved, you know, from the barnyard to the backyard to the bedroom. So since they're being treated as family members, I think they're being better trained rather than a resident dog that's tied up in the backyard and never socialized.
So you've been fighting the good fight in Illinois, had a lot of success there. Dare I ask how things were this past year in Missouri? Were you able to get anything through?
Well, actually, we worked on two bills to get rid of breed discrimination by Missouri cities. They passed committees in the Senate and the House and didn't go any further. Missouri is a really hard state, but there was good news in Missouri that a bill that now allows pets to be in orders of protection, and that is on the governor's desk.
So tell me what that would do.
So basically, if a person, is fleeing an abuser, they can ask that their pet be included in the order of protection, so the perpetrator can't get within like 100 yards of the pet, whatever. Because what we have found, and Illinois has had this law for many years, is that they'll use the pets as pawns. So they will take the pet and try to get the person to come back to them, or they will harm the pet. So again, this protects the person and their pet.
That's great. So that got out of the Missouri legislature.
It did. So there is some good news in Missouri this year, because for pets, it's usually pretty bleak.
I was going to say, Missouri does have historically the senses that it's kind of hostile to animal welfare groups. It's very supportive of dog breeding, which has been a pretty big business in this state.
It is. But, you know, the interesting thing is, for the bills to get rid of breed discrimination by cities, we work with the breeders on these bills, because they support them too. And on the insurance bills, we are in lockstep with them, and they are partners with us on these things. So again, there is common ground, that it's nice when you can find that.
So you're working on a statewide law that would stop cities from discriminating or having laws on the books that would discriminate against certain breeds?
And actually, with the caller, John, he lives in Ferguson. They have a breed discriminatory law. Fenton has a breed discriminatory law, but so many cities have gotten rid of them. University City used to have one. They got rid of it. Shrewsbury used to have one. They got rid of it. Town and Country used to have one. They got rid of it. So the trend is to get rid of breed discriminatory laws and focus on the behavior of the dog and the behavior of the owner.
To say, here's a way to deal with a bad dog, but
exactly,
let's not just flat out ban them.
Right. And again, a lot of these people are recidivists. So you take their, German Shepherd away and they're going to get a Great Dane and train it to be mean.
Yeah. So the bigger problem persists,
exactly,
whether or not that dog is there. Let's go back to the phone lines. Andrew is calling from South City. Andrew, hi. You're on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi. How you doing? A couple of thoughts here. I just had a friend whose brother lost an entire hand in an attack by a pit bull. And I understand that all dogs of any breed can be aggressive or turn aggressive or just snap one time when you don't expect it. But it seems to me that pit bulls just are so powerful that even, they can harm people not even trying to. Just, their heads are giant rocks, it seems like. And it personally, it's the only dog that's ever attacked and permanently scarred me. It was just a little ankle puncture. But
you have some skepticism there about pit bulls, Andrew, after that experience and your friends.
I do. And I'm a libertarian-leaning person. And it's really hard for me to say, anybody should be deprived of any kind of property. But I don't know. I'm on the fence, if you would ask me, but I'd be interested to hear arguments on both sides. It just seems that it's pit bulls more often than not that, when they attack, cause more significant damage.
Well, Andrew, thank you for queuing that up. And you said you're interested to, hearing from both sides of this. We do have one side with us here today. We can't give you both sides. But right. Leedy, what are your thoughts and what Andrew's saying?
So I from the libertarian aspect, I get it. Because, in America, responsible dog owners should be allowed to own whatever breed of dog they choose. It's that simple. But regarding, attacks, it just depends on the individual dog and their individual bite strength. So we've had, you know, really horrible maulings by golden retrievers, you know, that it killed a woman in Illinois. We've had, you know, dachshunds that took a woman down, a pack of dachshunds, you know, I mean, in another state. I mean, so again, any dog can bite. And the more of them that you have, you know, the pack mentality can kick in. So, you know, again, it just depends on training and behavior and leash laws. Leash laws are the best deterrent to, you know, to dog bites.
Andrew, I'm curious if you feel at all persuaded by Leedy's argument here. I feel myself thinking, yeah, man, I don't want a pack of dachshunds coming after me, whereas I see one in the park, I'm perfectly happy to pet it. Do you feel at all persuaded?
I've seen some really devilish chihuahuas in my day, but I don't know if I'd say persuaded. I would say I'm still firmly on the fence, but yeah, I'd just like to hear more arguments from both sides. Not that I have any say in policy decision or anything.
But Andrew, I do appreciate you kind of grappling with this.
Yeah, and go to the National Canine Research Council website. They have oodles of peer-reviewed studies on dog-related incidents and encounters, and that should help you get the data that you need.
And one other thing I wanted to mention here, Leedy, I've heard some studies that suggest that some of these bans on pit bulls or on certain breeds, that some of these are actually rooted in racial biases.
Yes.
As opposed to something that the pit bulls themselves have done. What do you know about that?
And it's really, really frightening. But Ann Linder, a Harvard fellow, she did a study. And basically, she showed six breeds of dogs and said, you know, who do you think owns these dogs? They thought white people owned all the dogs except the pit bull that they thought was owned by young black males. Hmm. And so, again, you see this stereotype. And actually, I was testifying years ago at a hearing at a city in the St. Louis County that was deciding on a breed discriminatory law. And the mayor pulled me aside and said, come here. You know, it's not about the dogs. We just don't want those people moving into our city. And I was aghast. I mean, that he, you know.
That's shocking that he would say the
exactly.
Quiet part out loud.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, I was stunned. I yeah. But
you think that's part of this for some of these municipalities?
I think it's part of the municipalities. I think given the insurance industry's history of redlining, that plays into it too.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. We start talking about dogs and it almost opens up the whole world to us.
Yeah.
There's so much more here than may meet the eye.
Indeed.
So you're working so hard on these issues. One thing I wanted to mention, you know, Missouri, as we said, historically, this has not been a great state for animal welfare. But you shared some statistics with me before the show. The one metric where Missouri seems to do better than Illinois has to do with no-kill shelters. What do the stats tell us about that?
So basically, if you go to bestfriends.org/2025, you'll be able to find where your state ranks as far as the number of animals killed. And so in 2019 in Missouri, Missouri shelters killed 6,491 animals, whereas Illinois killed about double. I mean, 11,933. So Missouri is doing better, but it could be, you know, part because of the population. You know,
there's
less,
more.
Right. So again, Missouri shelters still have a way to go, but Best Friends wants to make sure every shelter gets to no kill by 2025, saving 90% of the dogs and cats there. And our new shelter stats are going to be released in a couple weeks. So basically, we'll see if things have improved.
So, Leedy, one last thing I wanted to ask you about today. We've sort of looked back at what has happened and what's still waiting for signatures, but what you've been able to accomplish. What do you see as the next big challenge or quest that you're going to be into in the coming year?
I think, again, it's dealing with more housing issues because this bill does not impact housing authorities in Illinois. So that's something we need to look at. We, you know, and again, more insurance issues because we want to make sure pets can stay with their families. That's incredibly important to getting to no kill.
And so some of these pieces of legislation that you've got passed, you'd like to see those amended or expanded.
Exactly. Cleaned up.
cleaned up. That's a great way to put it. Well, Leedy Van Kavich, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It was great to be here.
And Leedy, again, is the senior legislative attorney with Best Friends Animal Society. And a quick programming note here. COVID-19 interrupted HIV testing and hindered efforts to mitigate sexually transmitted infections. On tomorrow's show, St. Louis County Sexual Health Clinic Medical Director Dr. Hillary Reno will explain how test shortages and limited clinic access explain the recent drop in sexually transmitted infection rates and not reduced sexual activity. So we'd love to hear from you. Have you faced difficulties mitigating or seeking help for sexually transmitted infections since the start of the pandemic? You can leave us a voicemail at 314-516-6397. Again, that's 314-516-6397. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.